and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Happy Black Friday to you, ladies and gentlemen. It is Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they are taking a much-deserved post-Thanksgiving, more than likely turkey comb a day. This fine, fine Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving when shopping is the most important thought process passing through every American's brain. That's right. Your synapses fire. They make sure that all day long you can feed yourself and button your shirt and walk out into public without making stupid faces. I fail miserably at these things. But on Black Friday, all those go to the side. The most important thing is sales, 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 cheap crap sales. This is the day when you can look at Christmas right around the bend and go, I need gifts for all my relatives. I care about them. I love them. But honestly, they don't deserve a good portion of my money. Forget it. The most important thing to me is that I satiate these idiots by buying things as cheaply as possible. I want you to look at something that I got for you and go, well, it's the thought. That's the important thing. It's the thought that counts. And it's true. I think we can all agree. The thought does count. It is very important. But the stuff also counts. And that's what Black Friday is all about. It's about the stuff. And mounds of it. This is the day to rush right out and get those sweaters that only Bill Cosby could make look good, and to get the last or the beginning, the next to the last of the hot toy. Is there a, you know what? I don't think there's a hot toy this year. It's interesting, but I think the last 2 years, because of the economic situation, no toy has made it to the top of the list for the hot toy. Like, I mean, we've really been a lot of noise about that. Tony, can you think of one?
Last year, wasn't it that Zuzu pet thing? That little, like, hamster thing?
Yeah,
that was kind of the big deal.
That's what I mean.
Year.
I think it was kind of a big deal. Nothing on the level of...
No.
You know, the cabbage patching of the world. And I mean, it's hard to keep that kind of magic going in the retail market. I mean, everybody dreams. I mean, retail buyers across the country, you know, who try to fill toy shelves, wake up screaming in the middle of the night, get a cabbage patch, just for the dream one day finding whatever that next cabbage patch doll is. You know, the Simon, the year it came out, the Rubik's Cube. But they really, I guess American Girl is kind of the closest thing, that doll you can get at, you go to the American Girl store. It's creepy. I know. The name of it freaks me out. But it's a little doll that you can go to the store and you can buy all the outfits and you can vector and you can pick what color eyes and hair she'll have. And, you know, it's almost like this weird futuristic Logan's Run. Instead of a baby, let's go to the baby store. We're going to go, we'll genetically modify our child. I find it disturbing. I'm not going to lie. I find it very disturbing. But there doesn't seem to be, and maybe I'm missing this, maybe people can call in and tell me what the big thing their kid is asking for this year. I'm curious, if at all. I mean, I think it's the state of the economy over the last 2 years. The working people of America have so been screwed by the policies of the upper 2% that, quite frankly, a lot of them are like, what would you like, little Johnny?
Food and shelter.
That's like the big. That's the big toy this year.
Food and shelter.
1-800-STEP-12 is our number. I will be filling in for Steph all day today. It's going to be a great show because we have Christine Romans this hour from CNN's Your Money. I call her the smart one because when I'm on there, she knows more than anybody they have on as a guest. And then, of course, we have in the second hour Rachel Sklar from Mediaite.com and, of course, blogger extraordinaire. She will be our window into all things royal wedding and pop culture. But what I really want to pick her brain about is social networking. After the movie Social Network came out and everyone's fixation on what the benefit of Facebook and Twitter and these kind of things is we kind of flippantly have turned into old people. I've noticed a lot of people, I don't tweet, and that's now the reaction of a generation. That's something that people in their 60s used to do about email. Now people who are 24 going, eh, this newfangled business. So I want to ask her if she thinks, as I do, that actually technology brings people closer together. You know, and I think most of the people who are against it would seemingly be against, I don't know, letter writing in the early part of the, the 18th century. This newfangled, if I can't shout, if they can't hear me when I stand outside my hut and scream, I really don't need them in my life. These people just busying up my day. I had enough going on with just my family and the people in my village. Now I have to talk to people outside my village? Good grief. What do I want to know? What kind of sandwich they're eating over in Rome? This is ridiculous. Letter writing. Who's going to carry this crap? So I have a feeling in many ways that it's going, that it actually does bring us together, that it is the intrinsic thing that brings us close together. And then, of course, in the third hour, David Bender will be on the line with us. The political guru that is David Bender, and will give us sort of a window into some of the 2012 shenanigans that are coming up, and of course Tom DeLay being found guilty day before yesterday of money laundering. Will he get 2 years and a slap on the wrist, time served nonsense, which he hasn't served any time, but they tend to find a way to wiggle around these things when you were in politics in Texas. Or will he get the 20 years maximum sentence for money laundering? This is the fascinating part. I mean, honestly, we all know that, yes, we get it. He was on trial for money laundering, but what he'll really be sentenced for is his dancing on Dancing with the Stars. It's really just, that's the jury throwing the book at him. Like, I don't know much about money laundering, but that cha-cha was nonsense. So in that third hour will be David Bender, and we will be talking about, by the way, the Progressive Talk Radio Cruise coming up in February. Very exciting. ProgressiveCruise.com. Go on there. Start salivating over one of those staterooms, because I have been given the exclusive at giving away a cabin on the Progressive Cruise. That's right. They're only giving one cabin away as a gift this year, and I'm the only person who can give it away. So follow me on the Twitter. That's a reason enough to start Twittering me. It's just that it's a potential for doing that. And then, of course, Facebook. And we are streaming live at housebarks.com/Ustream. And you can join in the chat there. We've already got a lot of the regulars in there from not just across the country, but across the world. I'm in studio today with Tony Sorrentino, the great Tony Sorrentino, who, quite frankly, if he wasn't in this building, I think it would collapse what? Don't shake your head at me. You are the glue that holds this place together. I've seen you plug and unplug things like no one else.
Thank you.
Yeah. Tony Sorrentino, the most necessary man within a 5-block radius of Alameda and Riverside. Actually, they parallel each other. But at this point, where they join, you know what I mean. It's better that people not know where we are anyways, because we don't need people outside clamoring, I want to meet Tony. He's so cute on the Ustream. I want to date Tony. We have this all the time. It happens in the chat. And then, of course, Miranda will be running the phones today. 1-800-STEP-12 is the number. And let's take a slightly early break. I want to check and see if when we're going to get Christine. It'll be a great conversation. And then, of course, we will come back with what Sarah Palin said about the First Lady and why John Stossel of Fox thinks that socialism almost ruined the first Thanksgiving, even though it didn't exist until the 1800s. But never mind. That was the one thing that almost that killed the pilgrims with socialism. We'll be back. I'm Hal Sparks. This is the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ongoing train wreck aside, I love this.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the House Parks. Stephanie Miller Show. This always, we're going to get in trouble, Tony. You and I always kick in with the music. You can't go wrong with Danko Jones, though. You cannot go wrong with Danko Jones. Houseparks.com/Ustream. We're streaming live, and you can see Tony rocking out to Danko Jones, which we are both going to go see, by the way. If they're playing this weekend, that has to happen. Next weekend, right, the 5th. Very exciting. I'll be here for that. That's got to happen. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number, and I had asked before we went to the break, is there some sort of special, you know, Uber gift this year? And let's go to Ike in Charleston, South Carolina. Ike, you there?
Yeah, hey, how you doing, buddy?
I'm spectacular, thanks.
Well, I'm just finally coming into from the desert into the beautiful world of progressive talk again.
Oh, yeah.
unfortunately, Charleston's like a lot of places that are bleeding red.
Yeah.
All you get is the blowhards from the right wing, which, don't get me wrong, I do battle with them. I'm used to being shouted over and hung up on and talked about after I reveal the little facts like, well, Ronald Reagan bailed out Chrysler, but they didn't call him a socialist.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Republicans, hey, yeah, they hate to hear that kind of thing.
And exploded the deficit bigger than any president of the last six, essentially. I think 181%.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't tell you how warm and fuzzy I felt when I saw DeLay's mug on TV talking
about
how our court system is an abuse of power and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Facing
up to life in prison for money laundering charges.
And I don't pray real often for anyone's demise, but that particular person is in the same category as Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and the whole group of them. But I just want to say, when it comes to technology, thank God the prices are coming down on no contract.
Smartphones?
Smartphones.
Yeah.
Even though I've been unemployed for a long time, because I'm in the construction end of things. I've managed to pull my little ducats little by little and finally get a hold of one. That's what I wanted to bring up. They've made it so difficult for people out here that are in the lower end, which is where I've been, to access the web, to, you know, whether you're going to look for a job, you know, the want ads are a joke. You got to go online. You got to submit this, that, and the other thing. Being an over 50 crowd, yeah, you're right. The smartphone, I figured it out why they call them smartphones, because I'll tell you what, when you first get them, you're going to feel like a real idiot
right. Trying
to figure out how to work the damn thing. But I just wanted to point out that, you know, it seems like they've got an artificial barrier, whether it be through temporary agencies that you have to pay part of your pay to get a job and go through that rigmarole, or whether it's these companies that insist on people going online and they don't want to talk face-to-face, which is how I've always gotten my jobs.
Right.
I just walk up as a 28-year painter, and I go, well, you know what, here's the deal. I'll work for you for 8 hours, and if you think I'm not a painter, you don't pay me, I'll just walk on down the road. You know?
Wow. It shouldn't necessarily be, I don't think, to that, especially if you've got, a history as a worker that you can stand up. You know, you can stand up next to anybody's. You shouldn't have to actually paint half of a house, and because then all I need to do is find six guys in your situation and pay the last guy.
Well, and in all honesty, to be quite honest with you, I think that's something that's really decimated my business or my profession. Is there's a lot of employers out there. They're doing that,
yeah.
And they're doing it with illegals. They're using them and they're throwing them away. And in a lot of cases, they abuse them. They put them in dangerous situations. They won't pay them what the trades demand
right. From
people like me. And, I know it's a down economy and everything, but I've watched this all through the Bush administration when they weren't producing jobs.
Right.
And it just got worse and worse and worse to the point that, you know what, I appreciate the employers out there, particularly the ones that do things the legal way. But I'll tell you what, this uppity attitude that they've got, on top of a bad economy, it's a real tough time for working people.
And again, the irony being that American corporations are sitting on the biggest treasure trove they've ever had. The biggest $1.66 trillion this year so far. Last quarter was the biggest quarter for American corporations in history. And this is something you can track. This is very specific. This is not when they say this is the hottest year on record and they go, well, there were probably volcanoes all over the place, you know, 1,000 years ago, and you can't judge it. We know exactly how much corporations have been making since the beginning, and we've been able, and we can also take the dollars of that time and compare them to the dollars of now and balance stuff out. This is the biggest quarter for American corporations in the history of America. They're sitting on top of $2 trillion, beyond what they actually gained this year, $2 trillion in assets, in new money asset that they're sitting on, and a trillion outside the country. And you're right, everywhere I go, I don't know that I have seen, you know, my buddy Brian here is in the studio with me today, and we were driving in, and jokingly we passed the, you know, there's a Home Depot down past my house, and a lot of the migrant workers, because I'm in Southern California, are Hispanic, they're all there, whatever. But we passed the Staples, and there were like three guys standing out front of the Staples, and I was like, are they Canadian? Is that where the Canadian immigrants are now going to show up? Like, I'm in, you know, office management, eh? I like manage your office for 2 days, because, you know, it's funny that we talk about illegal immigration, but it's always Hispanics that we're concerned with. But it's true. And in that, they are the ones that people go to for the jobs because they work very hard. They're very reliable, and they'll take it, quite frankly, because compared to where they're from, it's a plus. It's still better than what they've been through. It's so funny that, you know, they will fight and nearly die to get here, to get a job that most of us wouldn't take. Because of the conditions, and large corporate entities take advantage of that, and it's hard not to.
Absolutely, and you know, don't think there's Americans out here that won't do the jobs. It's just that we can't afford to do them for the price that these employers are using people to do them with.
Mm-hmm.
But in closing, let me just say, you know, I'm an American. I'm not an American. no matter how bad things get, I'm not buying into this sky's falling garbage they keep pumping out here. And I know we'll turn it around. And I just want to say, you know, I'm with y'all. I'm glad to finally be able to hear some decent radio. And I love Steph, and I know you too.
Yeah.
I've listened to you before, and expect to hear from me. And
excellent,
also,
absolutely. And by the way,
out there,
I was just going to say, because we're right up against the break, but you have Oregon Senator Ron Wyden to thank for the fact that you will continue to have access to the websites you want to see. Because the Democratic Senator of Oregon actually was the single block that stopped the vote on what would have been essentially an internet censorship bill. That would have,
I know the one you're, yeah,
yeah,
the
would
one
have allowed.
I'll call his office and make sure I
thank him for that.
How much I
thanks so much
that,
for
yeah.
the for the call, Ike. And we'll be back right after this. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in all day long for Black Friday. Coming up this hour, we're going to try and get her online. Christine Romans from CNN. Next hour, Rachel Sklar from Mediaite. She's at Rachel Sklar. Go follow her right now on Twitter, and you can see how wonderful and lovely she will be. And, of course, David Bender will be joining us in the third hour. I'm Hal Sparks. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. It's Black Friday. What are the deals you are dreaming of? I mean, if you weren't in a turkey-induced coma, which I, of course, don't recommend because I don't eat bird, but if you weren't, you were probably rubbing your hands together, you know, mentally clipping the coupons of hope that are the sales on Black Friday, thinking of who you're going to elbow in the face to get, you know, that last Christmas six sock set for $1 from, I don't know, Abercrombie and Fitch. Do they even sell socks? That's terrible. So one of the things, by the way, we're streaming live at halsparks.com/Ustream. And, of course, there's a wonderful chat going on in there. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. I would love to hear from you about what your plans are for Black Friday, because quite frankly, here's the thing. We've been talking over the last couple of years about a new sensibility in the American consumer, about people going, you know what, I'm going to stop buying crap. I'm only going to get stuff I really want, quality items, as it were. And then we run into this signs of the economy that there's retail panic, that if Black Friday doesn't turn out to be spectacular, the American economy is going down the drain, you know. You can't have both. Can't we look at Black Friday and go, let's work the savings figures into this as well? People are putting more money away, or they're buying stocks for their kids, or they're putting away a savings bond for their kids, and that's, you know, and factor that into the sales of Black Friday. But we don't. We kind of, really, it's all about sweaters, ties, toys, and odd books, you know, like the books that are too big to buy yourself and get home in your own bag, essentially. I got you that book you wanted that is a coffee table in and of itself, the old Kramer book. It's fascinating to me. How do you balance that? How do you say, on the one hand, we got to straighten ourselves up as a country. We got to stop just being crass. Consumerism drove us into the ditch. We're buying things we can't afford on credit and blah, blah. And then when Christmas comes around, I go, if people don't show up at the stores buying mounds of crap, we're going to die. It's so bizarre. Okay, so on the one hand, money shouldn't be the thing that buys you happiness or whatever, but I think one of the ways that it could maybe bring you happiness is in the form of security by not spending it. You know, by maybe this year, maybe, and this won't show up in Black Friday, but maybe somebody, instead of buying $100 worth of garbage for their kid, they're either putting $100 in a college fund for them, or they're giving their kid, here's $100. I want to show you the value of money. We're going to go down to the store, you and I, next week, and we're going to look at what you want to get for Christmas. And this is your budget for it. This is what you want. And by the way, you're going to get grandma a gift and your mom a gift and your dad a gift with that $100, let's say, or something. I mean, that's, I think, a more sensible way to look at it. But the sensible part isn't sexy. And if you acted on it, even though it's better for the country and better for your family and better for us as a, you know, as a whole, as a, you know, a collective, a word the right hates more than anything. We're not all in this together. This is Ayn Rand, man. Every white male for himself. It's funny to me that how do you balance that part of it? 1-800-STEP-12 is our number, of course, and we're firing away in the chat at HowlSparks.com/Ustream. Or it's actually, you can go to the Ustream site, too. It's Ustream.tv/channel/HowlSparksLive. And so what historically was yesterday about? I, because of my heritage and sort of where I came from, I'm not a big fan of Thanksgiving, for the same reason that Angelina Jolie came out this week and said, I don't celebrate Thanksgiving with my kids because it's a rewriting of history to cover the fact that we wiped out the Indians and we used their resources. Basically, the reason we had the strength to beat them to death was because we were eating the food they provided us with. And she was basically like, I'm not going to teach my kids this cartoon version of things. I think it's part of it. And some people are like, that's not right. A rewriting of history. Well, is it the rewriting of history or is it the re-correcting of history, as it were? That version of the word right, where you're like, that story we've been told for a long time is a bit off. So I just want to, let's just balance it out a little bit so my kids don't have this cartoon George Washington chopped down the cherry tree idea of what American history is, that you have, because one of the things that makes you feel in many ways that you can be great is that the great people in history were human as well, and that there was no miracle in most of human existence. There's a lot of happy accidents, but there was no point where these were blessed people. The pilgrims somehow were blessed to find the promised land over here. It just had pesky Indians on it, and we just had to wipe them out. We just pushed them. We didn't really, you know, it's almost like a wife beating. Like, I didn't hit her. I just pushed her. We didn't hit the Indians. We just pushed them onto other land. So, Your Honor, all I did was push them. So John Stossel on Fox says that socialism almost destroyed the first Thanksgiving. That's right. If America had not embraced capitalism, none of us would be alive. And if the Democrats had been in charge during the time of Thanksgiving, as they stand now, we would have all starved to death. That's John Stossel's idea. Here's what he said. Had today's political class been in power in 1623, tomorrow's holiday would have been called Starvation Day instead of Thanksgiving. In a column he wrote called The Lost Lessons of Thanksgiving. Of course, most of us wouldn't be alive to celebrate it. Well, it depends on how open your family was to crossbreeding with other people, because we might have all been alive, just a slightly, we would have had slightly more melanin and a more agrarian society. But I digress. In Stossel's, I'm reading from Raw Story. In Stossel's narrative, pilgrims and Native Americans almost botched the first Thanksgiving because they organized their farm economy along communal lines. Long before the failure of modern socialism, the earliest European settlers gave us a dramatic demonstration of the fatal flaws of collectivism. Unfortunately, few Americans today know it. The pilgrims of Plymouth Colony organized their farm economy along communal lines. The goal was to share the work and produce equally, and that's why they nearly all starved. Okay, never mind the fact that the reason that they did that was from a business standpoint, to produce they wanted to produce more quicker. Was the reason, the way they all joined together. They all farmed the same land because they wanted to be able to produce enough for themselves and sell some of it to the nearby colonies. It was their act of capitalism that made them overreach on the land and not be able to feed themselves, historically. Okay, then on top of it, this is sort of anti the concept of socialism, the basis of their, you know, being against things like Medicare and Social Security and those things, is that people should stand on their own. This is America. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. This is what America is all about. But Thanksgiving is actually the time when the Native Americans, in spite of the fact that these people were invaders on their land, were dirtying up the land and creating these really stinky campsites that eventually became towns, and the Natives saw them starving and went, we can't just let you starve. That's not part of our society, so here's some food so you don't die. And the pilgrims didn't earn that money, that food, right? They didn't earn that. They didn't build on an Ayn Rand level. The right thing to do would have been to let them starve to death. I mean, really, if you read Atlas Shrugged, the first people Atlas would have shrugged off his soldier would have been the pilgrims, right about 1621. So, okay, so Stossel's finally comes to the point. Secure property rights are the key. This is it. When producers know their future, products are safe from confiscation, they take risks and invest. But when they fear they will be deprived of the fruits of their labor, they will do as little as possible. Okay, there was none of that in them growing food. There was that thought form, when you live in a small, basically wooden, enshrined village where you're just surrounding, you've got a walled village, and you're growing food that's eaten and sold within that village. There's only a couple hundred people. Nobody's going, I'm not going to work today. They're just going to eat my, I'm growing corn and those are my ears of corn, not you. Like, nobody does that when you're a group of, these were the pilgrims. They were Puritans. They were, of all people, they were, anyway, so just madness. Like, that's just crazy people. But here's the thing. This is the way he justifies it. He says, if you drive through Western reservations, talking about Native reservations here in the country, you will see on one side cultivated fields, irrigation, and on the other side overgrazed pasture, rundown pastures and homes. One is simple commons, the other side is private property. You have Indians on both sides. The important thing is someone owns one side. This is what he's saying. He's saying that when you own your property, you treat it better than you would if you didn't. Now, never mind. Okay, small history lesson. The Dust Bowl. After the Civil War, the government, to try and quell all the sort of unrest, like everybody had fought for all this and everybody was really aggravated and nobody had any resources, the government said, you know what, we're going to start handing out parcels of land. And they did it all throughout the Midwest and into the Plain States. And they allowed people to farm on that land, just kind of, here's your land, you can do whatever you want with it. And everybody farmed the same basic things because there were certain crops that worked. Whatever. The problem is nobody knew how to rotate crops, nobody came from a line of farmers, they just started doing it and they stuck at it, so they eventually they used up all the water in the land and it turned the Plain States into dust-ridden deserts, essentially, because they gave them land to do whatever they wanted with no instruction whatsoever. So, but the point was that Stossel line about secure property rights are the key, that once you have the land, you don't do anything with it when you're guaranteed the land. Well, what's more guaranteed than a reservation? Property rights can be taken away. You can lose your to the bank, to some another buyer. Back in that time, you could be shot and somebody could take it. But reservations are reservations forever. So in his argument, reservations should be the most flourishing land in the world because what bigger? I mean, there is no risk. You own it forever. It's just the amount of contradiction is just amazing. Is amazing. So we got to take a break. But when I come back, we got a lot of callers who want to talk about the lack of connection to American history and what Thanksgiving was really about. I don't want to slam on the holiday as a whole because I think it's more the pilgrim kind of story that bothers it. Having a holiday where everybody gives thanks, brilliant idea. Totally for it. I think it can cross all kinds of religious and social lines. But this kind of rewriting of history to make yourself feel better about it is kind of bananas. So 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We'll be back right after this. I'm Hal Sparks. It's our show.
I don't know what that means, but I like the sound of it.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
See this? This is my boomstick!
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph on Black Friday. And by the way, quickly, on line 5 right now, it's your favorite Greg. It's my producer, Greg Alexander, from my Saturday show out of WCPT, Chicago's ProgressiveTalk.com. Greg.
Good morning, Hal Sparks. Happy belated Starvation Day.
Thank you, yes.
Yeah.
John Stossel has created a new holiday for all of us.
I'm sure Hallmark will just glom right onto that one.
It's the John Stossel diet. How are you this fine morning, sir?
I'm fantastic. Happy Black Friday.
Thank you.
Yes.
Are you going to take advantage of it?
Probably not, no.
Yeah. Because you're one of these smart, nerdy fellows like myself and Tony Sorrentino, engineer extraordinaire, who we're going to take advantage of Black Monday, which is the Internet Day.
Yeah, I've already started doing that a little bit. My goal is to not see anybody in the stores all season.
Yeah. It's anti-social America. Here we come.
I think it could be easily done.
Well, I especially the way you shop, because with your hours being in radio, same with Tony, you guys are probably going to stores at 11:45 at night to buy groceries.
Yeah, on Christmas Eve,
right?
Generally.
So,
I did a little research, too, and I found out that Jesus, Joseph, and Mary,
yeah?
They got in line at 4 a.m. at the Jerusalem Target.
That's,
and that was actually the night before Thanksgiving. Apparently, there's some history problems.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's by the way, why they couldn't get a hotel reservation. Because in those days, you couldn't do online reservations. There was no Expedia. So you had to go stand in line for a hotel room, too.
Yes,
and they
exactly.
were too busy getting the deals. And you can't blame them. Because not only did they have Christmas, but their kid's birthday was the same day, which is always hard
Poor
when you're
Jesus
shopping.
Always had to get combination gifts.
It's terrible. And he only got 3. It's interesting. Christine Romans, I hope we're going to have on, she goes, her rule this year, 3 gifts, maximum 3 gifts, because if it was good enough for Jesus, it's good enough for your kid.
That's pretty good. And frankincense, quite frankly, isn't that great of a gift.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
No, it's really lost its myrrh and frankincense. You know what those were great for? Getting rid of the stench of living in that time.
Yeah, they probably didn't have deodorant and stuff.
No,
did they?
Yeah, frankincense was the Febreze of its time. Really. We have a ton of calls, and I hope, by the way, that people will listen to the Hal Sparks radio program where Greg Alexander is our producer extraordinaire. Tomorrow, Saturday, from 11 to 1.
Central Standard Time.
Central Standard Time, because we're out of CPT, Chicago's ProgressiveTalk.com. And, of course,
the whole world can join in, too.
It's true, yes, and they often do by watching the Ustream feed. We have people from all over the world in there. And everybody, by the way, is saying hi to you and saying, I love Greg. Greg rules. You've earned it.
You think that I would get sick of hearing how much people love me, but no, not really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, at this point, I don't know how you walk down the street, but I guess you do it at 2 a.m. with a shopping cart. So people tend to leave you alone in those cases. No, I'm really shopping. Whatever. So thanks a ton, Greg, and we will talk to you tomorrow.
Excellent. My pleasure, Hal. Have a fantastic day.
Rock on. Happy Black Friday.
Rock on, brother.
Bye. So, and then we have tons of calls on the line, and we're up against the bottom of the hour, but I want to get to these. Mike in Seattle, Washington. Mike, you there?
Yeah, I am, Hal. Hey, I want you to do me a favor.
Sure.
I want you to reach up and pull that pick out of your eye after reading that Stossel article.
Oh, yeah.
God.
Yeah.
But a point I wanted to make, which I wish all people on the progressive side would make, is to buy American.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keep Americans at work. I know it costs a little more in most cases, but we're keeping people at work. It's a better product.
Right.
Okay. That gets a good point out. And one other quick thing was a lesson that, you know, Dad could do with the kids is drive them by some homeless people under some damn bridge during the holidays.
Right. Make them aware. Even volunteering.
Yeah.
The other thing is you've got a whole week off right before Christmas.
Right.
Most people have, you know, at school, they have a whole week off. A lot of times work, they'll take off the same amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
2 days before Christmas. This year, Christmas is on a Saturday. It could not be better. You've got Friday, Christmas Eve. Thursday or Wednesday, if you've got those days off, take your kids down and volunteer someplace and let them recognize how good they have it. Because if you want to make them appreciate what they're going to get on Christmas Day more than ever.
Could I make one plug?
Sure.
AllAmericanClothing.com.
Okay, AllAmericanClothing.com. And, you know, again, American Apparel, you know, is a great weird company. All odd semi-pedophilic ads that they run aside. The company itself is made, you know, all the stuff is made here. There's tons of actually good stuff. You can actually, eBay's a great source for it. So is Amazon. You can actually find stuff that's, you know, made in America that way. You can literally use that as a search point. That's what the great thing about the internet is. And you can get it from states all over the place. There are a lot of handcrafted things that you can get for people, you know, a city, a team that they like, those kind of things. You can get something from that actual city that isn't just like the plastic helmet from their favorite team that's made in China and shipped over here.
That's right. That's right. Hey, Hal.
Yeah.
One other thing. Happy holidays, bro.
Thank you. You too, brother.
All right,
cheers.
Man.
Thanks.
Bye.
We got 2 minutes. Let's see. I'm going to get to Terry real quick because as long as she can do it before the bottom of the hour. Terry, you there? In Houston, Texas.
Okay, Terry, yeah. I wanted to talk to you about Thanksgiving. I tend to think it's one of our more pure holidays.
Mm-hmm.
There's no patriotic connections like 4th of July. There's no religious connections. And I've never encountered anybody that actually talks about the pilgrims when they're eating. It's getting together with your family or your friends or your loved ones, having food, hanging out, being thankful. There's no presents involved.
Yep.
There's no commercialism. So I don't see why you have to go through all of the rigmarole about the pilgrims.
I agree. It's interesting.
Just, you know, take Thanksgiving for what it's meant for, which is a day of giving thanks.
Absolutely. That's why I was saying it really does, more than any other holiday we have, crosses over all religious and social and ethnic lines. You can get it. Everybody gets it. There's lessons of gratitude in every great religion and in every great culture and every great psychological platform. I mean, literally, you have within everything from AA to you know, standard kind of therapy, being grateful for what you have, being aware of what you have, is central to most things. So you're absolutely right. So we're up against the bottom of the hour. I gotta go. But thank you so much for calling in and making that point. Appreciate it, Terry.
Okay, thank you.
Cheers. We'll be back right after this. I'm Hal Sparks. This is, of course, the Stephanie Miller Show. Next hour, we've got Rachel Sklar from Mediaite.com and a wonderful blogger in and of herself. And then, of course, in the following hour, David Bender will be on with us, and I will be taking more of your calls. We got a couple more people on the line. I want to get to them top of the hour. It's Black Friday. Do you have plans? Are you just going to stay in and stay on Facebook and avoid the world? Tony's nodding. I'm Hal Sparks. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We'll be back after this.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph on Black Friday. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. We have several calls on the line and a lot of people wanting to talk about the kind of what Thanksgiving means, should mean, and this over-fixation on the pilgrim parts of it and rewriting history to make it seem like this sort of innocent holiday, when a lot of people, I think, are more aware over time that it was really just kind of the initial, I guess like a prelude to the slaughter of the Indians, and just a total lack of sensitivity on the part of the British and the Irish and the Germans and the people that all, who were coming across at the time, that these people were human beings and that they, you know, it was just like, well, of course they would bring us food, and we'll later on we'll just take their land. It's not a big deal, you know. That's just what we do. We did it in India. We did it in Africa. We're just doing it over here now. And over time, it's been glossed over and become something sort of cute, like a big sharing thing. But then John Stossel comes out and says that it's an example of it's only because of capitalism and the mentality of capitalism that Thanksgiving happened, and that collectivism and socialism and the idea of working together would have destroyed the first Thanksgiving. It's just this. It's amazingly revisionist. So I want to go to Al in Gary, Indiana. Gary, Indiana. Gary, Indiana. Hey, Al.
Very good. Hi, Al. First of all, before I forget, thanks to Miranda for working all the way from 10 o'clock last night.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd also like to make a couple points. You know, this people that are enslaved by this phony individual, these theme that people keep commenting on. You know, I look at it like, you know, it, for some reason it's considered capitalism and entrepreneurship when the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, various industries band together, and that's entrepreneurship. Whereas if you want to band together and sell your labor as a fair at a fair price as a guild or a union, then you're considered a communist or a socialist.
Right. Well, you're considered anti-capitalist. Instead of going, you know what, I've got some capital, my ability to work and my craftsmanship, so I'm going to get together with other people who have ability, work, and craftsmanship, and we're going to set a price. But, like, you'll notice these guys will fight price-fixing laws when it comes to giant corporations, like, you know, the Monsantos and the Walmarts of the world. They should be allowed to set whatever price, and you as a consumer should have to eat it. But if a group of human beings go, you know what, we're all good at painting houses, we want there to be kind of a standard, because we know what we're doing, we worked hard, we know how to make do a good job, we've proved it again and again, we want to be able to eat regularly and raise children. That's considered evil. Yeah, I'm totally with you. That's a great example.
Double standard.
Yep.
And, you know, this might be simplistic, but going forward in the future, I think that people, you know, whether you're Democrat, libertarian, or whatever, you know, maybe we should put into legislation just a simple statement of fact as a jumping off point for debate. And, and it has to be read as part of a law or when debate begins. Stick it into a law that at least a statement has to be read, and it could be, it's almost like a thought tax in a way.
Right.
Or an earmark for your mind, if you will, or a morality index implant. Stick it in, and before debate begins, it's one of the first or second things that's read. Just a simple statement of fact. Of, this is a good jumping-off point. The Indians could have used that. You know, back in history, if it, every time something concerning commerce in this country early on, there would have been a simple reading of fact, what about the Indians?
Mm-hmm. Well, in many ways, that's how those tribes worked. There was a balance in conversation. They noticed after a while that if let to their own devices, the men in any kind of tribal society like that would totally overpower the women and not listen to them. So a lot of the native tribes, especially the higher order ones that eventually banded together and became the Five Nations, the ones that, you know, like the Cherokee that eventually had written language and all this stuff, were well on their way to a solid society. This idea that they were nomadic and just constantly chasing the sun as opposed to knowing how to farm land and not ruin it, which is what they were doing. they realized they had to listen to the women in the tribe. So they would set up a system where the youngest and bravest among them, the men, like the young warriors, would stand in a circle around the women, and the women would be given their time to talk. And the reason they had the braves do this, the young men, was to keep the older men from intimidating the women into saying what they wanted them to say. And they had this set up, this, they protected that environment. So they knew that a contrary thought form, you know, and one way of thinking was a great way to ensure demise. It's just like a any kind of an animal that loses its immunity because it over-specializes genetically. They knew that if you only heard from one side, the male side and the ruling male side, not just men in general, but the ones who would beat somebody up to come to power, if all you did was listen to those guys, you'd get one form of governing, one form of solution every single time you had a problem. And they knew you needed different kinds. So they set up a system to do that. And then, you know, we come over and kind of spend a couple hundred years making sure that doesn't happen. It's very curious.
And, you know, a modern aspect of that is these microloans that have been developed over the years. I think it started maybe in India.
Absolutely.
Where the heads of families, widows, oftentimes would receive small amounts of money in order to manufacture something. And it would help the women themselves and their children. And, you know, that's just a brilliant idea.
Yeah, well, you know, microloaning across the world is a game changer. There's all kinds of sites like Kiva.org, K-I-V-A.org. There's micro. You could kind of find tons of them, but even Entrepreneur.com has a list of places to go. It's really fascinating. Some of them are crap, but the ones that they do where you can literally loan $100 to a family in. You know, you can provide that basis for that loan. You can secure the loan for $10 for $100 that they would get in Africa or whatever. And they could take that and buy an animal or dig a well or do all kinds of things that, you know, because that dollar goes so much farther there. It's life-changing. And then you look at, you know, giant corporations getting loans and then just kind of sitting on them and handing them out to guys who already have millions and millions and millions of dollars. You're absolutely right. By the way, to dovetail it back into this, and I thank you for the call because I want to be able to get to my other one. Thanks a lot, Al. Another great thing for the holidays. You're going into Christmas. You want to give somebody something, you know, a bond, a stock, or something like that. You can make microloans and go, this is what you're doing. You're actually loaning them the money, and you'll make a bet. You actually can, for $25, loan money across the world. It's pretty fascinating. And then you can watch that grow, and that could be a gift. Just on top of whatever you're going to get them, you're going to get them a sweater, blah, 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 but tell them you also made a loan, you know, a microloan across the globe in their name. It's just a great way. It's very much more in line, I think, with this, the meaning of Christmas. And if the right's going to claim that there's a war on Christmas, then I think one of the ways you could prove to them it's not is by really attaching yourself to the true meaning of it. And I don't mean the religious meaning of it. I mean from the winter solstice to Hindu family traditions, to Kwanzaa, to Ramadan, to Hanukkah, and all of them across the board is this idea of giving and letting people know that they are loved. And understanding that we're all part of a big human family, those kind of things. All the things the right seem to be fighting tooth and nail against this year. But if you want to stick to that true meaning of it, beyond the, you know, this kind of religious window dressing of it, one of the things you can do is microloans, is small, like, even if it's World Vision, if you're going to give it to World Vision, you're going to sponsor a child, and you go, you know what, I paid for you to, this child will be sponsored for a year in your name, those kind of things. It's just a great way to go. By the way, we're streaming live at HalSparks.com/Ustream. You can join in the chat there. There's a great group of people in there talking right now. And, of course, on Twitter, at HalSparks, where, by the way, Jelperman is just on fire on Twitter this morning. And the Follow Fridays are flying freely. It's a good time over there as well. So you can be involved in the conversation both ways if you don't want to log into the chat that way. We'll be back right after this. We're going to take a break. I'm Hal Sparks. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We'll be back with your calls and Rachel Sklar in the bottom half of the hour. Very exciting.
A beautifully wrapped, glossy, sweet-smelling show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Check, please.
That's right. It's Black Friday. The deals, the steals, the toys with wheels. Everybody is out today hunting for that big toy, the number one toy this season that everybody's talking about. Nothing. Nobody. No big toy this way. I think, I don't, how do you wrap sensibility? How do you tell your kids, all right, enough with the crap. You get one good video game, and I really want you to play it all the way to the end. And if you can't make it, you don't get to the next one. This is a good way to teach your kid mad skills. You worry about how video games might be affecting your child. Make him get all the way to the end before you buy him another one and prove it and have a certain skill level. Like, unless you have two more badges on PlayStation 3, I'm not getting you another game. You need trophies, son or daughter, because girls play as, you know, equally play video games, and they don't get nearly the credit for how good they are at it. It's, you know, very boy-centric. But on the line, by the way, we have Bill from Clifton, New Jersey. Bill, you there?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Hi. I wanted to comment on capitalism, but before that, you brought up the Iroquois Nation. I don't know if you knew that only women were allowed to vote on going to war.
Right.
And that George Washington was inspired by the that nation to have a group of states.
Okay, that's just heresy. I'm going to stop you right there because clearly you are un-American, and to suggest that any idea came from anywhere but the mm-hmm. Lord God and George Washington's backside, all of it was thought up in an afternoon just by divine inspiration. The Native Americans, the French, that whole nonsense about somebody having multiple mm-hmm. religious books and consulting right. all of them to try and create the best system is crap, mister. Just
right.
Stop right there. You're ruining the holiday for everyone. I hope you're proud of yourself. You know what I mean? It's just...
Check, please.
You're fired. All right, go ahead.
Regarding capitalism, that's a misnomer as well. Capitalism is the buying and trading of capital. Capital is stocks and bonds and financial instruments. It has nothing to do with free enterprise. It has nothing to do with retail sales or anything like that. It's a just a form of trade.
Yeah, it's the initial financial. It's the foundation of it. It's like it has nothing to do with the windows and the roof and the walls, as it were.
It's trading papers. It's Wall Street. It has nothing to do with retail sales or giving. It has nothing to do with the Pilgrims for sure.
Well, it certainly doesn't have anything to do with them. I mean, that was no system. They literally came over there because they were trying to escape religious persecution. I'm going to let you go, but I appreciate mm-hmm. the call, and it's an excellent point. But they came over here, and they were trying to escape religious persecution. This is the whole purpose. The C of E was telling them how to do their business. They wanted to worship God by falling on the ground and shaking, the Quakers, and they wanted to, you know, speak in tongues and handle snakes or whatever. And they just wanted to live alone and have buckles on their hats. But either way, the church wasn't having it in England. They had a very special thing. They wanted big churches, and they wanted it all about – this was originally wresting democracy to some degree back from the church. The church, the Protestant movement separating – from the Catholic Church was the first kind of step away from monarchy that the church would take. It would, you know, this monarchical concept that the church was based on was eventually, they separated from the C of E, and the Protestant Church was about, okay, let's, you know, smaller churches, more, you know, on the, you know, boots on the ground kind of religion. And the Puritans were, the Pilgrims were a natural extension of that. They were, okay, we don't need big churches like the cathedrals. We don't even need these, you know, mini cathedrals that they're now building. We could do this all in a house. We can read the Bible and interpret it on our own. And we don't want the government telling us that. So the separation of church and state was, by the way, found in the Bible. Because Moses made one of his sons in charge of the day-to-day governing of the Israelites, and his other son in charge of the religious part, and never the twain shall meet. He made them because he knew that once you start mixing those things, it's easy to get confused. One guy's got to keep the water clean, and the other guy's got to pray for clean water. There's a different zone of things. You can't have those two people working on the problem at the same time in the same meeting room. It doesn't work. So that goes all the way back, I think, to Deuteronomy. But insofar as how the pilgrims saw it, they just wanted to get away from being told how to worship. And they came over here. They were willing to just get on boats and go someplace and, you know, and risk it just for the ability to do that. And the separation of the church and state was something that was intrinsic to their lives. That was what they came here for, is that they could start anything where anybody was free to be ever however they want. Because there were different religious sects within those groups as well. Not everybody. It was not this monotheistic I guess they technically were monotheistic, but there were different forms of thought on how to, you know, there was separate groups within them that believed in sort of a focus. The difference between, you know, Lutheran and Methodist kind of concept of things. We're not that different. We just a couple of, maybe one book here or there. But the difference was allowed. So anyways, the fascinating part is that we have this concept that America's foundation as a Christian, Judeo-Christian nation, which, by the way, is how it allows us to pick and choose from the Old Testament and the New Testament freely, as opposed to saying you're a Christian nation where you can only do the New Testament, which eliminates eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth and the ability to wipe out your enemies. So we like to have access to that part. So we like to go back to it when we want to and claim divine right to wipe out an entire group of people because we want their land or their oil or whatever. That's very helpful to have the Old Testament to draw from. If you just have the New Testament, you lose that quiver in your that arrow in your quiver. So and I think Joel in Asheville, North Carolina wants to address that a bit. Joel, are you there?
I'm here. Yeah, I just wanted to touch base with you on the business about the pilgrims. You're talking about them wanting to escape religious persecution. They were actually the ones who were leaving England because they weren't being allowed to persecute others. And what they'd been trying to do, they were a part of a larger group called the Puritans.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd been trying to impose their view on how society should be lived on the Church of England for many, many years. They didn't believe in song in church. They didn't believe in wearing colorful clothing.
Right.
And they wanted to impose this austerity on England in general. And they left because basically they were a religious group trying to impose their beliefs on a general society. And
right.
They weren't there. They are not people to be honored.
I totally agree with you. But also, kind of on a mechanical fact, they did. Their religious freedom was the reason that they came. But they certainly did not come here to start a capitalistic society where they could, you know, on the lines that John Stossel is talking about. And if anything, just the opposite. I mean, they were more communal, almost, you know, basically Branch Davidian in what they were, you know, thinking.
They were, but I wouldn't give a hoot about their religious persecution, because it was simply a question of survival of the fittest in England as far as the politics go, and they lost the political battle, which our Christian right is trying to
win back
upon us all over again.
I totally agree. Thanks for the call. Excellent point, Joel. I'm Hal Sparks. This is the Stephanie Miller Show, filling in today on Black Friday. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. We'll be back with Rachel Sklar after this.
You figured, oh, here's a loser, you know, a deadbeat.
Well, aren't you?
Well, yeah.
Your loving gives me such a thrill, but your loving don't pay my bills. I need money, what I want. Give me money.
Work loves the working man. Don't trust Whitey. See a doctor and get rid of it.
I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph on the Stephanie Miller Show. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. And, of course, we'll be getting Rachel Sklar in just a few minutes. It's the East Coasters today, trying to get a hold of the East Coasters the day after Thanksgiving. I think they're in coma nap zone, and so we're having trouble gathering them up. The in the serious news zone of things. North Korea and South Korea are ratcheting up tensions in a way that is good for no one, which is probably the best news about it. Not only is it bad for North and South Korea and the United States, it's also really bad for China, considering Korea is attached to China the way, if, for those of you that are, you know, geographically aren't aware, in sort of the same way that Florida is attached to the southern part of the United States. It's a peninsula that directly, North Korea is just a few hours' drive from Beijing. And so they have a serious connection to that country and a reason for it to, A, be strong in the world sphere, but they also have a lot – there's a lot of impetus for the Chinese government to not let it – let them go off the deep end, which, unfortunately, when you're transitioning from one nutcase near-monarchical ruler to his son – is always a tense and odd part. And basically, South Korea was doing some war games, which they announced to the North Koreans. They made clear to them America's there as observers, quote-unquote, mainly to just see how well our guns fire, because we tend to, as Bill Hicks used to say, you know, Iraq, incredible weapons. How do you know? We looked at the receipt. But as soon as that check clears, we're going in. What time's the bank open? 9 o'clock? We're going in at 9:15. We've been selling arms to countries all over the world, and one of them is South Korea. We have bases there. And we are over there as observers, and we're watching them conduct these war games. And during that time, the North Koreans fired on the island where this is taking place. So basically, the two of them are shelling the crap out of this small Minnesota-sized island, this like those little inlet islands they have in Minnesota that are, you know, the size of the Glendale Hills, or maybe 18 by 20 miles, one of these things, which apparently humans love to shell the crap out of islands that we think have no use but are covered in birds and animals that are going, what did we do? There's really nothing going on there. That means there's it's full of animals we can't eat. That's what we mean. If they're not delicious, we really don't care if we nuke them. You know what? Maybe they'll turn delicious. Maybe if after years and years of testing nuclear bombs on certain islands, they'll be tasty. So this is it's fascinating that the South Koreans go about bombing this island, and the North Koreans are ratcheting up their tension. So this is, again, from Raw Story. North Korea warned Friday that U.S.-South Korean plans for military maneuvers put the peninsula on the brink of war and appeared to launch its own artillery drills within sight of an island it showered with deadly barrage this week. Now, keep in mind, earlier this year, the North Koreans sank a South Korean ship, killing 46 sailors on that boat. This is the kind of thing that when you look back over what led up to big wars, in historical context, it happening, you know, the year leading up to World War One, the year leading up to, and I don't think that's what this is, but the year leading up to most major skirmish wars, even, you know, Burma, Myanmar, or the Congo, there were, leading up to it, you know, 2-3 years of constant drumbeat, constant buildup. And it's not going to end well or anytime soon. This is, and with Kim Jong-il going out and his son coming in, it gets really dangerous, because the only upside, and Jim Ward sometimes talks about this, is how fixated Kim Jong-il and his sons are on American culture and how much they like it. And the Kim Jong-il's sons actually would love to go to Disneyland and stuff like that. They're adults, but they like Western culture, and I think there's more of a chance once they take over, if they can put all their need to bomb everything aside and kind of walk into the new millennium, there might be a chance there in that regard. But during this transition, I think that has more to do with it than anything. The scariest part, and I, you know, it'd be interesting to hear what you know, people think insofar as how worried you are about this. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks, of course, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on, you know, their Thanksgiving weekend vacation. I'm actually going to a potluck at Steph's house tomorrow, a bring-your-own-dish thing. And it will be difficult to bring a dish, considering that nuclear war may be in our future if we don't control South. It's funny when things like we look at sometimes the conflict of small countries fighting each other, and it's not that big a deal. But with North and South Korea, North Korea has, thanks to a completely look the other way mentality in the Bush administration, 9 nuclear weapons they didn't have in the 90s, at least, and. Apparently, a scientist, I believe from MIT, was allowed to look at their nuclear facility and was shocked at the modern level of centrifuges and stuff. We always talk about how we can't let any kind of tubing get into Iran because Iran's going to build all these nuclear facilities, even though we know full well that the tubes that they're using are that you can't use for that. We know the measurement. Meanwhile, North Korea has super modern facilities for making nukes, and this is a really worrisome thing. I would say the single thing that would turn Barack Obama's hair completely gray over the next 2 years. This will be the thing that worries him the most, because whether or not these guys launch one, they're not going to hit us. Their rockets, the kind of rockets they have, can't get over here. But what they could do is hit South Korea. They could hit parts of China. They could hit Taiwan. They could, it's a small circumference, but a frightening one, not the least. And Jerry in Albuquerque is actually concerned about this. Jerry, you there?
Yeah, I just want to say I think there is going to be a war because Kim Jong-il is a crazy person who is dying, mm-hmm. and he is the cult leader of his whole country, like Reverend Moon is the cult leader in South Korea. And I think when he dies, he's going to want his whole nation to die with him.
I do think the one thing that may protect us from that is this idea of him passing it on to his sons.
Well,
depends on whether his sons can hold on to it. We're talking about, this is the kind of history, by the way, that's been going on forever. You know, that this is, you know, when you pass governments from father to son, it's always bad.
I think that, you know, this, you know, for instance, the Reverend Moon, he's at least partially sane. This person is completely insane.
Yes.
He's the god of his country. And I think the god is threatened with death from illness, this is his big chance to destroy everything. And I think that's what he's going to do.
Again, I hope you're wrong, but I think if you are, it's because he sees himself in his sons. If he's that level of, a lot of times those guys are good about that, and or how smart and conniving his sons turn out to be. But that's, again, the factor that happens historically. If you look at what happened with Abraham's sons and how Israel and Judah separated into two countries, and arguably the Israelites at that time in history became the bad guys and Judah became kind of the good guys in this area, they ended up warring with each other horribly. Every single one of the big patriarchs in the Old Testament, by the end of their reign, they're in horrible disarray. And a lot of times they pass what they're doing on to a very weak son who ruins everything that they supposedly gained during that time. The opposite is also true. Sometimes a maddened father hands over his reign to a son with a little more sense, and since he's so nuts, again, it's a teetering zone. It's really why we, you know, why this is such a touch and go situation, is that if their sons turn out to be more, you know, leaning towards the West than he is, and crassly manipulate him into going, oh yeah, Father, you're the great one, until he, you know, he's kind of deaf and dumb on his deathbed, like, you know, like the King of England when Sophie Marceau whispers in his ear that she's carrying William Wallace's child and that his son will be barren, but he's too old and feeble and can't speak and he can't do anything about it. That's the kind of stuff that's going on over there right now.
Well, I think that, the United States, first off, we're involved in two wars, which I feel are both illegal wars.
Mm-hmm.
But we're involved in two wars. Now, how in the world are we going to fight in Korea when we're involved in two other wars? So we've got 35,000 men in Korea, and the only thing we can do there is either let them get annihilated or withdraw them.
Well, interestingly enough, this I think is more about China now than it is about us in some ways. Now, we are clearly the point person in this because of our visibility and our attachment to the South Koreans and our having been at war there before. But the last time when we were there in the Korean War, China was not the superpower it was, and it did not have as capitalistic a system. It didn't have it was fully communist and at the height of its kind of it was just getting past the Cultural Revolution. There was this attachment. They were still in a very weakened point. They were economically not a force in the world. Now they clearly are. I mean, China is surpassing nearly everyone. India and the United States are fighting to keep up with China. And China is attached to Korea. They have more to lose in a short bunker war between these two countries than we do, arguably.
I agree with you.
Because the march of communism is not something we are really concerned about anymore.
I agree with you. If it wasn't that the one big factor is the North Korean leader is insane.
Yes. Well, and again, I think they have impetus in – they know he's insane, and they have – they're worried about it too. And I, like I said, I speak Chinese. I travel over there. I get it. You know, I know that you can tell that they're concerned about it. It's as if – can you imagine if northern Florida was ruled by Saddam Hussein and southern Florida was ruled by – I mean, for lack of a better person, Sarkozy, you know, and we had this tenuous kind of tension with Sarkozy in southern Florida, but northern Florida is right. I mean, we're literally between us and wedged up against the country. This is where China is in this factor. And again, before they didn't kind of give a crap. He could do whatever he wanted, but this was pre-nukes, China becoming a huge economic force in the world. Its weapon of choice now is trade, not guns and bombs. They're never going to invade a country physically. They could in a heartbeat, but they're never going to do it. They're going to do it financially. They've learned that that's the bloodless war. And
well, this shows you how much we need a draft in this country. If there was a draft and the rich man's son or daughter had to fight alongside the poor man's son or daughter, it'd be a lot less wars.
That's no question. But that's
the way it is.
That, again, and when you're talking about places like, you know, Korea, this is, you know, in North Korea especially, this is compulsion. Everybody has to serve, and that's the difference between, you know, the two countries in that regard is that, you know, is conscripted troops versus, you know, compulsory. But anyways, I'm right up against the break, so I need to take a break. Thanks for making that point,
sure.
And we'll talk to you again. Have a great Black Friday. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. We'll be back in this, of course, Eric in Seattle, Washington, also on the line. Fascinating conversation, and you know, probably the scariest thing on the line. Al-Qaeda, less than 50 of them in Afghanistan, the whole country. Meanwhile, Kim Jong-il sitting on top of 9 nukes and is completely bat crap insane. We'll be back. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
No need to thank us. It's what we do.
Who the hell are you guys?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
And the answer is none. Or black.
I think you'd like recognizing this whole thing like into something.
None more black. It's Black Friday, and if you ask how much more black could it be, and the answer is none. None more black. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. We are arranging to get the lovely and talented Rachel Sklar on the phone with us in just a moment. But real quick, interestingly enough, I think Black Monday is here to stay. I think that in many ways, it's the new one. I think the idea of, you know, going to stores specifically to buy stuff for the, you know, for the holidays, it has shifted, has gone the way of the dodo. It is a 1950s concept that we are well past at this point. And in many ways, we are now in the era of the Amazon, eBay, world. This is how business will be done personally. There'll still be stores, but I think stores will be more an indication of localized stuff. So, you know, as you've got a storeroom of stuff, you ship your stuff all over the country, but you have a store right there in front of you. And big companies like Apple and stuff will always have their own, you know, interestingly enough, I think Apple has started to define something in retail and in television, which is your own product and a product-centric store. The Apple store is not, you know, they fought so hard to get into Best Buy and all these other things, and they were rebuffed because Gates and Microsoft made sure that they were muscled out. So they said, hell with it. We'll start our own store. And more you're seeing that being sort of indicative of how companies are going to do business. You're going to go into specific stores for specific stuff that's that line, just like clothing lines. You know, they used to be just, yeah, you had Abercrombie and Finch, and yeah, you had all these things, but Betsy Johnson has her own store. You know, you can, maybe Betsy Johnson's carried in a couple other stores, but the main thing is that you go to the actual Betsy Johnson store. Banana Republic, everything there is Banana Republic design, Banana Republic as a concept, and we're not weirded out by that. That seems normal, and if you want to order those things, you can do it over online. But, so anyways, that in and of itself, and by the way, Rachel, I know you're trying to, oh wait, she's on, we got her on the line, hold on. So, there she is, ta-da, you made it.
The Rachel Sklar store as we speak.
I know, yes, the grand opening of the Rachel Sklar store, which is just called at Rachel Sklar, which is
exactly.
Because you're branding on your Twitter better than any human being that's ever lived.
Thank you. I think that's really the only effective branding for myself that I do these days, because every time people are like, what are you doing these days? I'm like, well, it's complicated.
Right.
And I tweet.
See? Well, that's what I mean. Then you are a Facebook brander. Even what you just said, it's complicated. You're using social media terminology to describe your actual work situation.
I've often said that I wish that there was an it's complicated option for work on Facebook, you know, whatever with the relationship status. That's always complicated. But work,
yes.
I think complicated would be effective.
Exactly.
I mean, follow the Zuckerbergs.
And because we're tight on time at the bottom of the hour, I might have you hold over and come back with us at the top of the hour so we can talk to you, because we only got a couple minutes. But I wanted to, Black Monday is coming up. And this is the big internet sales day, and businesses are going crazy on social media networks trying to drive people towards that, you know, those sales, getting stuff online. Do you think this is a major permanent shift?
I mean, I think that, you know, pegging the internet to any specific date and time is more of a, you know, a quaint anachronism than anything else. The internet is well underway with sales and stuff today, mm-hmm. on, you know, quote unquote Black Friday.
Right.
And by the way, I think that, like, calling anything Black Monday just doesn't bode well. You know, that's
right.
When the markets crash.
Exactly.
Finding a way to shoehorn internet-specific stuff into, you know, the traditions we enjoyed pre-internet. I mean, I think that's here to stay, definitely.
Right. Yeah. I actually think there will be some element of shopping that will be food oriented going into the holidays forever, because that's localized and you know, shipping is a minor element of that. But as far as buying gifts, this might be the big deal. You know, since we only had a minute with you or whatever, Rachel, can we call you back at the top of the hour and chat a little more?
Sure.
Because I want to talk
to
you.
It's Black Friday. I got nothing going on.
Right on.
Shopping.
It's complicated, the things I want to talk to you about. We'll be back with more with Rachel Sklar right after this. I'm Hal Sparks. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. 1-800-STEPH-1-2.
Shut up and never say anything again as long as you live.
ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. I am filling in for Steph today while she and the Mooks are enjoying their post-Thanksgiving food coma so they could rest in a little bit because they wanted to actually be able to go out to dinner with friends. And when you have to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, it just does not make it conducive to, having a nice meal at 7 o'clock and laying down and falling asleep on a couch. So I'm glad that they decided to take the day off, and I'm glad that you decided to join me. Of course, we are streaming at Hal Sparks Live on Ustream, which is fantastic. And still on the line with us, we have Rachel Sklar. Rachel, are you there?
I am.
Yay! Okay, so we were talking before the break about this concept of, you know, Black Monday being a bad name for it, but that, you know, clearly the internet sales animal is here to stay and will become the dominant form of that. But insofar as social media as a way of raising those sales and all that kind of stuff, and the personal aspect of you're going to the holidays and then people are sitting at holiday dinner texting their friends and Twittering and foursquaring at grandma's house, do you think this whole business of social networking is a good bonding thing, or it's creating more separation?
Well, I tend to think it's a good bonding thing. I think it, of course, can create separation. Like anything else in life, it's how it's done and what it's used for and for mm-hmm. what needs it's filling in people.
Not how big it is, clearly, right?
I'm not a Thanksgiving celebrator, not because I don't like food, obviously. I'm Canadian, and so I just didn't go home
right.
This year, and
True.
I don't know, I didn't actually do anything other than sort of work last night, which was, and watch Stephen Sondheim tribute on CBS, which was awesome. So I experienced Thanksgiving vicariously through people's Instagram photos of their turkey and, you know, their check-ins and their comments and things that they were thankful for. I found it quite a lovely way to participate. And
Well, sure, because you don't actually have to be there with their families.
It seems to me to be people always take photos at family events.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people, it's just an update of what it seems to me that people have always done. They take photos, you know, it's a variation on the sort of like the Christmas card that people would send it every year with a photo and there's like the newsy little email
right.
or rather letter update. Like, I don't see what's wrong with that. Social media creates a different network of connection, and so you are able you're able to very easily stay connected to
yes.
those people through that. And it's not, you know, it's, as Malcolm Gladwell calls them, weak ties, and his otherwise really not very good article in the New Yorker, but that's a good way of describing it. And just because they're weak ties doesn't mean they're not meaningful.
Right. Well, and also I think I remember the days when I would go home to visit my mom and digging up friends from high school was near impossible because if they moved or they got married or they changed their names, there was no Facebook at that point. There was no MySpace, even was just kind of getting off the ground, and people still didn't know how to use it. And if you had a married name or a maiden name, a lot of people, you couldn't track that or make it a possibility to see. You couldn't attach yourself to your school and say, I graduated this year, so you couldn't do a search of, oh, who's in town that graduated that year. I find it much easier now to go to Chicago or Kentucky to visit my relatives and still be able to find and catch up with people and physically get together with them, or people in cities that I wouldn't have known otherwise, that, you know, because I travel a ton, and to get out there and actually meet people and go to dinner with them and actually have sit-down personal experiences, which you would not have had without the connectiveness of things like Facebook. And, of course, the weeding process that is Facebook, so I can get a good look at you at arm's length before I decide we're going to hang out. That's the other thing it's really good for.
Sure, but, I mean, you know, people put out what they want to put out, then obviously people aren't going to put their, you know, their major flaws
right.
out necessarily. I mean,
you're not supposed to? I've been doing that all along. Oh, crap.
Over time, people are knowable, right? People are knowable through what they choose to put out there. Often people are who think they're managing themselves very astutely become knowable in what they choose to put out there and how they choose to present it. People reveal themselves all the time. I mean, that's
right.
one of the things about this, and that's good and that's bad, depending on what your goals are. But, you know, to assume that you can get to know the full picture of a person just by, you know, a one-way read of their Twitter stream is obviously, I think, a little naive. But
especially when you conflate so many things like that. Yeah.
So it becomes part of, it's a place for you to basically, you know, you learn to evaluate someone and you see what, you know, their judgment, you see what they choose to share, you see what their reactions are to
right.
things.
The truth is there whether or not they're aware that they're spreading it. You know, they're giving that information. If you're astute enough, you can go, okay, I know what they're telling me and I know what they're not telling me. And I can learn from that either way.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
So, and then again, a generation, how truthful are we on our Facebook pages and our Twitter feeds now that we know that it's, you know, there was a rush to just kind of spill, sort of a Webble diarrhea, as it were, that people were just kind of letting loose. Now, people are much better at managing their social image. You know, branding is a normal word for people who otherwise wouldn't have used anything close to that in their life. They're now aware of it as far as the image they're putting forward on Facebook and Twitter and their own websites.
Yeah, it's a little, it's a teeny bit of an obnoxious word just because it assumes
Thanks.
That people
Thanks very
you
much.
Know that every
I try.
Person in, no, yeah. no, I mean, I think, but it's reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is reality.
Right.
But it just does feel like, you know, you don't want, like, you don't want, like, 16-year-old kids to be thinking about their branding, right?
Right.
Like,
well, I mean, whether they use that word or not.
Private life. You
yeah.
don't want to be thinking about your branding, like, private, normal individuals. But the fact is that, you know, the line between public and private is exceptionally blurry now, and
mm-hmm.
it's a continuum as opposed to, you know, categories.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, some of the people in the chat room are another way that people are interacting digitally. In the chat room, and Shelley Lynn, and they're saying people could seem much more stable on Facebook, and making the point that you can create an image that makes you seem okay to potential job people, to potential dates, potential, you know, to old friends from high school, and then when you actually see them, you're like, wow, you look so together on your profile, and you're kind of a wreck. You know.
Well, okay, here's the thing. I think pretty much everybody is, quote-unquote, a wreck, you know, underneath when you, like, get to a point of intimacy with someone where you're capable of being disappointed.
Spoken like a true New Yorker.
No, I mean,
I
think it's spoken like a true person.
Right.
I'm not going to disappoint or you know, like, I don't know, like, have a conflict with someone that I'm just casual Facebook or
right.
or Twitter friends with, because there aren't going to be any expectations. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's when you have friendships and relationships, and, you know, people rely on other people, people invest in other people, people sort of, like, feel there's loyalty involved. There's, I mean, come on, this is the stuff of
yeah.
of drama for, you know, way pre the internet.
Exactly.
This is just how people interact, and that's normal. So everybody seems so wonderful and nice at first, because why wouldn't they? The people who seem like crazy aggressive weirdos at first, you already know they're a crazy aggressive weirdo,
right.
but you know, everything's action reaction.
So you favorite them and poke them, but the nice people you keep at arm's length. I get it. No, I'm all joking aside, I think there is humanity is humanity, and this is just a delivery system for who you are. And
that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, and I'm sure that phones and letters at a certain point where, you know, some of the best letters that we get to read in history, so when we look back at letters where people were being completely honest about their emotions. But then there are letters that are clearly meant to be read by other people. You start being aware that other people were going to be reading your letters, so you start drafting letters for those people, not the person that's actually addressed to. That's basically where Facebook and MySpace are now to some degree. And Twitter, you know, I will honestly say that I am as truthful as I am comfortable being on Twitter, but I will often delay detailed Twitters to after I have left a place. As opposed to going.
Are you talking about Foursquare?
Foursquare is a closed network, so I'm okay with that.
Right.
But Twitter, if I'm saying, if I want to say something about, you know, I'm at Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf and we're having a great time. We're sitting around. Here's a picture of us hanging out, and it's clear that's where we are. I'll wait an hour after I've left, just so, because I don't need help with stalkers. I don't need help with, you know, people
right.
in general. Like nobody does, and it's not just because, you know. I'm in the public eye at all. I mean, a lot of people, I think that's a smart plan, unless you want
I'm
people
sorry,
to meet
I
you.
I tweeted that photo of us from Walgreens the other night.
Yeah.
I think we had left Walgreens.
Are you crazy? Do you not realize? By the
yeah,
way, the,
I mean,
by the time it got out, we were gone.
People who went to Walgreens right after.
Yeah, the rush at Walgreens from the Best Buy across the street. thank you so much, Rachel Sklar, for giving us a window onto it. And, of course, following her Twitter at Rachel Sklar. And reading her blogs are some of the best internet fun you can have. And have a lovely anti-American holiday. I'm going to say, just
you horrible
Canadian person. Without, you know, what do Canadians have to be thankful for other than?
I have so much to be thankful for. I love the opportunity to go, and I can go visit people and eat their leftovers today. Kidding, I love Thanksgiving.
Exactly. Well, and yours was, you already had yours, by the way. It's like October 10th or something, isn't it?
Second Monday, I think, in October.
Yeah, see? Pretty close. So, anyways, I joke. You are one of the things I'm thankful for. Rachel Sklar, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. I'll see you in New York in a couple weeks.
Awesome. Thanks, Al.
Bye. There she goes, Rachel Sklar. And we got to take a break really quick. We're already short on time, but we're coming back with David Bender, who's already... He's going to be waiting for us on the other side of this commercial. I just know it. And there's a lot to talk about with Ray. There's nowhere you can't go with David Bender. His brain is nearly as big as mine. I'm not ashamed to say. It's just filled with different stuff. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Like being stung by a bee or getting a splinter or being chained to a wall in someone's sex dungeon.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Don't trust Whitey. See a doctor and get rid of it.
Check, please.
I'm Hal Sparks. Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number, but don't call in right now because on the line we have the lovely and talented David Bender. David Bender, how are you, sir?
My brain is almost as large as yours.
Almost.
Almost, but filled with different stuff.
It's true. I was trying to...
That's one of the best introductions I've ever had.
Thank you. I was trying not to inflate your ego too much, because if I told everybody how smart you were, they'd all be frightened. They wouldn't want to...
You can inflate my brain. I'm reminded of the Woody Allen line. My brain is my second favorite organ.
Right.
So, you know, it's all fine. It's all good.
Yeah. I've often said, as a pickup line, my brain is your second favorite organ to whomever I was talking to. So, and they'd go, what's the first? And I'd go, you'll find out.
You'll find out.
Thank you.
Yes, oh, those kidneys.
Yeah. very important. The ability to process with.
It is a red letter day this Black Friday, isn't it? With you were talking earlier about Tom DeLay, and I actually, first off, one must be careful about, you know, premature any kind of Asian, but in this case, celebration.
Yeah.
He has been found guilty of money laundering, and it's interesting, Hal, because if you follow this story, what it was that he channeled money through the Washington committee so he could get money back into Texas to affect the congressional districting lines. He was basically building his power base so he could stay in charge of House Republicans, be the majority leader.
Right, the key to the permanent majority. This was, and this, he wasn't alone in this, by the way. He was part of, this was the plan across the board. This was tried in other areas.
But he did it better and bigger than anybody. He redrew lines for 7 legislative seats, which basically, you know, made permanent for a time the Republican House majority. I mean, that was the goal, to hold on to those seats, and he did it very well, illegally using that money. Now, here's the problem. First off, the law in Texas says that the reason that they had to do it this way is that corporate money is illegal in these legislative races. Well, the Supreme Court has now rendered that moot.
Right.
If this were going on today, he could have just directly gotten the corporations to give to those legislative races.
Which, by the way, one of the reasons why they fought so hard and lobbied for that to happen and why the conservative court did that was because that's part of the long game. And they're trying to make sure that this doesn't, they can continue to do this and it won't stop them in the future.
Follow the money, as Hal Holbrook once said in a parking garage. And that is exactly where this went. Now, the sentencing is, this is Thanksgiving, the gift is unwrapped right before Christmas. And what's interesting is he's the judge, who is Pat Priest. Now, I don't know if you remember, Pat Priest was also Marilyn Munster. Turns out they're different people here, but still, Judge Pat Priest has to decide and has great latitude on what could happen.
Right.
And most bets are that if there's any jail time, it'll be minimal, perhaps a couple of years, certainly not anything close to life. And it likely probation. But DeLay's team is not content with even that, with leniency. They are working to overturn this thing, and they're going after the wonderful, the actual profile and courage. If you want to talk about people who really deserve credit here, it's a guy named Ronnie Earle. He was the district attorney for Travis County, where this case was brought, Austin, Texas. And this is a guy who fought tooth and nail to get this indictment and has gone after corruption. He's now retired. He retired a year ago. But he is the guy who deserves credit for following this thing through. And you know, there are too few heroes in American politics these days. Ronnie Earle is one of them.
Right. By the way, we are talking to David Bender, the genius that is David Bender, the man with the largest brain that I think is allowed in the United States at this point, ever since most people don't know that George Bush signed an executive order against intelligence in his second year in office. And
he printed his signature, actually.
Yeah, it was done with like many of his executive orders, with crayons and hammers. And the only way genius is allowed in the United States, according to that executive order, if it has the word evil right in front of it. It's a little statistical point. But you can also listen to All You Can Stand of David Bender on Ring of Fire Radio. RingofFireRadio.com is the site. It's spectacular. And by the way,
Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Mike Papantonio.
Yes, I would have gotten, and you and I, by the way, as well as Robert Kennedy Jr., are going to be on the Progressive Talk Radio cruise in February.
And Mike Papantonio.
Oh, Mike's going to be on too. Good.
And Mike Farrell.
And Mike Malloy. Right.
And Mike Malloy. It's lots of Mikes and Congressman Alan Grayson, who is my particular hero, is going to join us, and this is all happening in February. Yeah, we're going to be shipmates. I'm going to be Gilligan. You're going to be the skipper.
I think it's the other way around.
Well, actually, I could be Marianne, but let's not go there.
Let's not go there. But in all honesty, though, I think how tall are you?
6'2".
Yeah, you're 6'2". I'm 5'9". I qualify as little buddy in that situation. Just don't hit me with your hat, whatever you do.
Yeah, but in no rational world are you a little buddy.
Thank you.
Let's tell people it is progressivecruise.com, and they can see pictures of us in hats.
That's true. Can you hold for the break? You want to talk to me after
the break?
Absolutely. That would be great. We'll be back right after this. I'm Hal Sparks. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. We're in the last half hour of me filling in on Black Friday, and you're not going to want to miss my personal Black Friday tips at the bottom of the hour. They're coming. Here they come. It's going to be exciting. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We'll be back right after this. I was doing it.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. Check My Brain by Alice in Chains is, I think, a great reference to who I have on the line. We always have to have David Bender around to check my brain, just to make sure I got my facts right and my concepts all fired up. Ringofireradio.com is the site to find the station that it airs on in your local area, and if it does not, you can listen to the podcast, you can stream it, and I highly recommend it 5 days a week, and brilliant every time. David Bender, Mike Papantonio, and Robert Kennedy Jr., it's just something you need to hear. David is on the line with us. David, are you there?
Indeed.
So,
and in fact.
Yes. So, and ProgressiveCruise.com, 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 ProgressiveCruise.com. Mike Farrell,
and
Mike Malloy.
The lovely and fabulous Daily Show co-creator Liz Winstead.
Liz Winstead will also be with us.
If we're talking about Ginger Marianne, our friend Kerry Harrison, Pacifica Radio's Kerry Harrison.
Right.
It is really a great group of folks.
So are you saying, which one are you saying Kerry is? Is he Ginger or Marianne?
No, I'm not. I was leaving that to you. You do the casting.
Well, first of all, you can't be a Ginger because you're not a Ginger.
One of the Howells, possibly.
Neither Kolfash or Hayseder, which means your hair is black. You're not fooling anyone, sir. I would like to bring up something in this segment, which
Please,
I think...
Do you actually want to talk about something?
Yeah, I would like, you know...
Yeah, I think that's a good plan.
So, Representative Todd Akin, Republican from Missouri, took to the floor of the House of Representatives.
Not to be confused with Clay Akin, right?
No, I just love that... whenever they say it, it's Representative Todd Akin, R. Moe. But stood on the floor.
As opposed to R. Larry or R. Curly.
Wants to give us all a lesson in revisionist Republican history. And this is what he says. The pilgrims came to America to flee unbiblical socialism in the 1620s. It might be helpful to think back and say, there's more to Thanksgiving than the pilgrims, so saith Akin. They were a group of people who were willing to change the system, to think of different ideas. Like burning witches, I suppose. They came here and separated civil and church governments. They came here and created the model of written constitution, the idea that the government should be the servant of the people. They came here with the idea that after trying socialism, that it wasn't going to work. They realized that it was unbiblical, that it was a form of theft, so they pitched socialism out. They learned that in the early 1620s. King George the Socialist.
Yeah, it's actually like King John Stossel, isn't it?
Really? Yeah. At what point was the British monarchy socialistic? You're living in a dictatorship. Like, you're fooling yourselves. I thought we were part of it. We're an anarcho-syndicalist commune.
It's one louder, really. Here's the problem. These are people who, like Congressman Akin and so many of the other the Tea Party folk, the only Tea Party they've attended is, in fact, Alice, not in Chains, but in Wonderland. They have not read our own history.
Right.
They know as little about our history as they know about European history.
Right.
Which is how this stuff gets invented. Any kind of mindset that can allow for the fact, and I'll bet you if you dig down and interview the congressman, he'll also point out that, you know, the dinosaurs came to that first Thanksgiving.
Right.
Because the planet's only 4,000 years old.
Right.
And these folks, when you hear them talking about socialism with King George, you realize that all of their history is conflated. It's cartoon history.
Right.
It's Mr. Peabody and Sherman. Actually, Mr. Peabody and Sherman
had their facts right.
Yes.
Right. This is the thing, and this is actually a meme they were really pushing this time around. And this goes in line with that whole Glenn Beck concept that social justice in churches is something to be afraid of. That if your church tries in any way to balance overreaching corporate and government power towards against human individuals, it is somehow suspect and dangerous. That Jesus himself, if you read what he's saying, is God punishes the rich and the poor had it coming.
Yeah.
Well, how do you wrap your head? Again,
well, you don't wrap your head around it unless you're using it to wrap fish. The thing that is true here, Hal, and again, when we talk about Glenn Beck concepts, these are invented. These are made up.
Right.
Because the man uses a chalkboard, people sit there and hang on every scratch, you know, that he puts up there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's wrong with this picture, is that it is not fact-based, and it doesn't need to be. This is the problem, that people will – the more you tell people who are Glenn Beck-alites or ditto-heads that their facts are wrong, the more they resent you for telling them their facts are wrong. You can't win an argument like that. That's, you know, what's that childhood thing? You know, I'm rubber, you're glue.
Whatever you
know,
say, bounce off me and stick to you. Right. Yeah.
That's what we've come to in our political debate.
Which is very reassuring when you
win those arguments.
When Sarah Palin says we have to stand by our North Korean allies, which she said yesterday.
Who you can also see from her house. I'm glad you brought up Sarah Palin. You know,
really? That's,
so many people,
those words
so
very seldom come together, by the way.
Are thankful for her. Mm-hmm. So many people say, God, what a gift. You know, we look at 2012 and we think if she's on the horizon,
please.
This is a great thing. It's you know, people will look at this. I got to tell you something. I'm old enough, and frankly, Methuselah and I went to school together. Here's the deal. The same conversations. I was trying to remember where I heard this before. Democrats celebrating early on a radical right Republican nominee who would be so easy for the incumbent Democratic president to beat. And then I remembered it was 1980. When all these folks said, oh, they're going to nominate Reagan. He's crazy. He doesn't know anything. He makes up his facts. He's good in front of a camera, and that's it. And Democrats were celebrating the potential of a Reagan, disaster, debacle. And then he took, 44 states against Jimmy Carter.
Right. But I think there is a profound difference insofar as just mechanics between Ronald Reagan and her, because he finished his term as governor, for one. So he did run on an actual record of governing, whether or not you liked it or not, is immaterial. The fact that he finished is like a huge feather in his cap comparatively.
That matters, again, to you and me and the reality-based folks. You made a great point with Rachel that, we're in a world now. Sarah Palin is doing something actually brilliant. I know it's oxymoronic, but she's doing something brilliant. She is campaigning. She is reaching people entirely through social networking. She's doing it through Facebook. She's doing it through Twitter. And nobody knows how to deal with that. None of the other candidates on the Republican side, the media doesn't know how to do it. All they can do is report on her tweets and on her Facebook postings. And she is unfiltered to her constituency.
I agree. But I also know that she has she keeps coming up short of Mike Huckabee and Mitt Romney in all the primary choices for the actual GOP.
Yeah.
Both of whom are two other completely unelectable morons. Honestly, first of all, Mike Huckabee could have the greatest policy mind ever, which he does not, and there's not going to be a President Huckabee anytime there's – I mean, Barack Obama at least has some sort of harsh kind of staccato name to it. It sounds – Obama sounds like boom, but Huckabee sounds like he should have a corncob pipe, and there's just no way – and he knows it. It's like it's trying to lick Tim Pawlenty's chin. It's not going to happen.
I'm sorry. Aren't you from Kentucky?
I am, and I
and you know that there is the potential for Mike, not Hussein Huckabee, to resonate with a lot of folks. But you know, again, anybody who looks at 2012 now through the lens of these early trial heats, because remember, Barack Obama was nowhere four years ago. Right now, I mean, Hillary Clinton was winning by 40 points. So
that's true, but he was also a firebrand who delivered like the most shocking, powerful Democratic speech that across the line people were going, "Ooh, who's this guy?"
Yeah, no, absolutely right.
There's nobody even on the right doing that with Sarah Palin. They are arguing basically for the power of her messaging without ever bringing up the message itself,
which is how George Walker Bush became the Republican nominee in 2000.
That's true, but he also had pedigree as with his father. I will always argue that there's anchors that made these other morons get in that she just does not have. In Reagan's case, he was also beloved and well-known for a long time, but he'd been involved in conservative causes for three decades. He did that Medicare, anti-Medicare album in the 60s. You know, these guys, they've been grooming him. The GOP establishment was cool with Reagan for a long time before he even became governor of California.
He had campaigned for Barry Goldwater.
Yep.
He was a big deal. But without putting too fine a point on it, there is a through line, and it's Goldwater to Reagan to skipping over George Herbert Walker Bush to George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah Palin is right on that through line. They're the outsiders. They're not the establishment within their party. They're the outsiders. The establishment in the party is Ike, it's Nixon, it's Bush's father.
Right.
They're the establishment people. Bush's father the other day saying, you know, if my son Jeb doesn't run, and he's not going to run, this is, you know, it was a little bit of news actually with Papa Bush saying that Jeb's not going to run.
No way.
We'll see if that holds true. But he said, the guy I like is Mitt Romney. And he's the through line of that guy.
Yeah. Well, that's because they were always pushing Romney as the Reagan front. And arguably, the Reagan presidency could be seen as the first Bush's presidency, because after the assassination attempt in 81, there was a large, you know, there was, you know, Reagan as figurehead, other guys making policy. And this is the way they've chosen to govern in a lot of ways. That's what George Bush Jr. was all about. That's what W was about, was Cheney and these guys will establish policy, and he will be the goofy face that we can skate stuff through.
Yeah, the
problem is Palin is that person, but she thinks she knows what she's talking about, and she doesn't. And even her own party, 18% of them think she could be electable, and they're a much smaller number than they used to be. And when the independents come around this election cycle, I'm telling you, she may make a ruffle, but there is no way she makes a serious run for the presidency that actually lands. And as a matter of fact, I think she's the...
Are we making a bet now?
Yes, we are.
We're making a bet. I'm betting you right now that she... Oh God, I can't believe I'm saying this. She is the Republican nominee.
You know what? I'm for it. But I also think that the only way she is if they divide that party three ways. Huckabee, Mitt Romney, and her, and they decide to pick their GOP primary the same way they do Dancing with the Stars, and people can vote multiple times using email. Because that's the only way she wins. She wins in ratings and in those kind of things, and in retweets. But votes aren't retweets. I can retweet somebody's Twitter 100 times.
Been previously. We're going to find out in 2012. But again, we just made a bet.
We did.
And people are going to keep us honest on this one.
And the nice thing is, I'm really happy either way.
I won 2006 with Rachel Maddow on the air, making the same bet the night of the election that the Democrats would take back the House and the Senate. So there's a little history here, and I'm still waiting for the payoff. She owes me minor league baseball tickets for that bet.
Well, the nice thing about this one is I win either way, because if she isn't, then maybe the Republicans will put somebody up who actually has a brain in their head. And if she is, the Democrats are guaranteed a win, because... That's just absurd.
There you go, my friend. And again, 30 years ago, I remember this. Ah, Reagan, it's a slam dunk. The guy's a loose cannon. That's what people said. And so it is a case to be careful what we wish for.
But again, this was a guy who had been governor of California, you know, the second largest state in the country, for his full term. And everybody came
two
around.
Two full terms.
Right. And she's done half a term as that and has a reality show. I get that there's a popularity aspect, but ultimately you're asking people, if you had to vote on, you're saying, how about Kim Kardashian at this point? Because that's really the level of popularity. And she has the same cascading effect. Understand that every time Bill O'Reilly says, it's all about ratings and Fox is number one in the ratings because then how come he's not referencing Glee? Why isn't he taking his political clues from Glee and its popularity and its openness towards gays, for example, because it beats him in the ratings, right? And if that's the standard, if she, her retweetability, even though I think a full-on 60% of the retweets that Sarah Palin gets are actually people going, can you believe she actually said something this stupid? Repudiate? Are you kidding me? And, you know,
repudiate is now the word of the year, though. And it made it into the lexicon. And follow, we said follow the money before.
But the same way the situation did.
Follow the book tour.
I get it.
Where is she now?
She's in Iowa. Absolutely.
New Hampshire and South Carolina, paid for by Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't think for a second I don't know that that's where the game is. I just know the practicalities of it are totally maniacally absurd. And she is no Ronald Reagan on 100 different points. And we both know that Ronald Reagan in this current party would be drummed out for being too liberal.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. I knew Ronald Reagan and Governor Palin.
You're no Reagan. Right.
That's the line we can
half
use.
Governor. We have to call her half governor. That's silly. We got to go because we got to take a break. Thank you so much, David Bender, for making a bet with me that either way I win.
I love the win-win solution.
And I will.
Always a pleasure, Hal. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. I know I will see you before the Progressive Cruise, but I will see you on there. Go check it out, kids. ProgressiveCruise.com because I will be giving away a cabin on the Progressive Cruise. On my radio show via and my Twitter account, you have to pay attention, kind of to both, tomorrow. But we'll be back right after this on the Stephanie Miller Show, 1-800-STEPH-12.
We have to seem like a sexy, profitable company, and we're almost pulling it off.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
What?
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. We're in the waning last few minutes of the show, and we went a little over on that last break because we had David Bender in a great conversation, and of course, I made a bet with that Sarah Palin, I don't believe she will be the Republican nominee, and if she is, the process will tear the GOP apart because it's a dumb idea. I mean, I got a lot of blowback when I was on Joy Behar this week on Tuesday when I said that Sarah Palin is a dumb person. And I don't mean that accidentally. She's willfully ignorant. She is part of a social order, a social clique in this country that equates ignorance with innocence. It's a biblical adjunct to a church-like way of being that if I'm unaware of sin, I will not be guilty of sin. Abstinence-only education. If your kids don't know about sex, they're not going to have sex. Homosexuals. If homosexuals have to keep in the closet, then there won't be any more homosexuals because it's a choice and they'll see them and my kids will want to be gay. Not that they're born that way, but that, so the less I know, the better off I am. It's willful ignorance as social protection. It is a prophylactic against evil is being dumb. And if you'll notice, most of her interviews sound like remixes. Like somebody just took a whole interview and randomly cut words out of the middle of them, where they just kind of, you know, and that's why trade and jobs, when we're, you know, and this president clearly, you know, socialistic thoughts and not. This is why the American love is something that only families, that babies are left. I mean, it's like, if you listen to her interviews, they're like that. She's just pulling buzzword chunks together and making this kind of gruel of moronic nonsense. And it's stunning to me in the last 2 minutes of the show that we have rushed by in the show. This has gone so fast today. And I have not only Tony Sorrentino to thank, by the way, and Miranda for making it smooth, but, of course, Rachel Sklar and David Bender for being on the show with me. And, by the way, I'm going to try and get Christine Romans on my show tomorrow. We weren't able to get hooked up with her because of timing or whatever. My show, of course, on WCBT Chicago's ProgressiveTalk.com. We'll also be streaming that live. I'll be doing that from Hotel California tomorrow. And special guests, Chris Bono will be on us, and McNugget, as many of you know. And this is the thing I kind of want to leave you with. Maybe it's time to give education as a gift. Maybe it's time that this Christmas is the Rosetta Stone Christmas. These are the two things you could do, a foreign language and a trip. If you want to think that America is exceptional and perfect and good, that's great. But I don't have to listen to you unless you spent significant time overseas. And I don't mean the Congo, where it's relatively obvious that we have it good going on. I mean, go to Europe. Go hang out over there for 10 days. Come back and tell me that they're a dirt hut society, that socialism has failed. Have an honest argument about it. But don't remake history and say that the pilgrims were actually escaping socialism and that's why they left the monarchy of England. It's nuts. It's stupid. So here's the thing. Before you go, this is, you know, we only got a few minutes, like a minute left, I think. Is it about a minute? 30 seconds. Here's my Black Friday tip. Look for the stuff you want. Go on and get a smartphone app. Walk around and look up the scan the actual UPC symbol. Find the best price. That way you might be able to order it online. Make your Black Friday a Black Monday conjunct. Put them together. The other thing is re-gift. Make this a re-gifting Christmas. You have tons of stuff around your house that you don't use and people really like. Pass it on. If they like it more than you do, it's theirs. My name's Hal Sparks. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Happy Thanksgiving.